Welcome to Analytics Dynasty podcast. This is going to be a joint quarterback snap reactions as well as trade deadline reaction here. So got some stuff that kind of blends a little bit together. So I just figured I'd hit it in one big fell swoop, sort of open with the trade deadline stuff and then hit up the quarterback stuff. So big stories here, I think. First, my biggest reaction to this was, this is great news for Tua. They don't have another first-round quarterback. They don't have another first-rounder to address quarterback. This shows a belief in him, I think, right? And we can see the stuff that's going on the field. We don't necessarily know what's going on behind the scenes. So whenever we do get additional information, that's helpful, right? We think of some of the stuff with Russ and all that stuff. Like, what do we not know? Now, this is a level of commitment to the fact that they're going to push their chips in here. And they're going to push their chips in, right? Quarterback on a rookie deal. And they don't have a – they had two picks next year. They lost one because of the tampering stuff with the Brady stuff and all that and Stephen Ross and that whole rigmarole. And now they trade a first for Bradley Chubb. So shows, I think, a commitment both to, hey, we believe in sort of the direction of this team. We also believe in Tua long term. I think that's those are two – That's a big deal in terms of how we think about this position. We'll discuss a little bit more in a couple minutes, like in the quarterback aspect of the show, a little bit about the, kind of where the what I would say the quote-unquote young quarterbacks, where they would be, sort of the post-extension or the pre-extension young quarterbacks, if you will, sort of their direction, and we'll talk about that in a bit there. Hockenson, I don't know if this does a ton, right? We haven't seen him be elite. We have seen other people be elite, including Amon-Ra St. Brown. But we haven't seen him necessarily like get the metric stuff that's elite. Is there more ceiling for him? Maybe. I just don't know if he's going to draw the amount of targets, if he's going to draw the amount of opportunity in this offense with... with Justin Jefferson there, this does seem like, they have been a very Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen centric sort of 1-2, and not really with a clear three. Like, it's sort of ebbed and waned a little bit with Dalvin Cook's involvement in the passing game, right? They sort of have done some of the stuff, some tight ends and stuff like that. Conklin had done a bit. Irv Smith never really got off the ground. Now Irv Smith's hurt. So they bring in Hockenson, who almost feels like a real good three, honestly. Like, I think one of the problems that we've seen with Hockenson has been he's kind of needed to masquerade at times as the first option in this on this team, right? And that happened last year a bit. It's a lot to ask for a tight end. And we've seen it, but typically we see it with guys that are like Hall of Famers, right? Like Kelce masquerades as the one, right? Like he is the one. He's not masquerading as it. Right? It's not typical that we see tight ends lead their team in receiving. So, and it's just hard positionally. I think it's, we've talked about this. Tight end development's very, very difficult. I've always thought because it's not a clear cut way to always get them the ball, right? As you're lining up in line. There's a lot of confounding factors to that. Hockenson has, it's been a little bit of, I just don't think he's elite. I think he's very good. And when you're not elite, it's really tough to sort of be that target hog in an offense. Now, with that said, could he potentially see some additional efficiency stuff because maybe, Cousins is a better quarterback than Goff. He is going to an offense that is probably going to be able to more consistently move the ball. Like, we've seen Detroit be really good, but this has been a relatively short sample size with him this year. We've seen Cousins for a while be better, I think, than Goff has been. And so I think that's probably, it's maybe a floor raiser, but it's, I don't know if it's necessarily that much of a ceiling raiser as well. And we don't truly know the longevity of what Cousins is anyways, but he probably won't have to go through like a they probably won't bottom out the way that Detroit could have bottomed out next year by taking a rookie quarterback and the like there. So doesn't have to necessarily go through that growing pain there in Detroit. So I think that's, you know, it's kind of a neutralish move for him. Is my analysis on that one. Opens up an opportunity for James Mitchell, Brock Wright. Talked about those guys in the waiver show. James Mitchell is a guy coming out of college that's interesting to me. I didn't know how he would fit in sort of the trajectory of his career, coming in with an ACL, coming in behind a first round tight end on a rookie deal. Like, there's not a ton of opportunity for him there. And so I it was a little confusing. Now we see a little bit more of a potential opportunity for him, and I think that's a really interesting angle. So cheap, in safe leagues, a couple percent, something like that, add him to the back end of the roster and just take a look, see how this offseason goes. Maybe they readdress the position. Tight end's a position you can address in free agency, and I think one of the things is, as we look at, I keep watching the NFL and try to steal ideas. I watch the NBA a lot of times and try to steal ideas. And one of the things I think with this Hockenson trade in particular is you have to be drafting premium positions. And I think that's true in our super flex leagues. I think that's true in our tight end premium leagues, right? You have to address premium positions a lot, right? And I think you have to be super careful about not drafting players that are not premium positions. So you think quarterback, it's wide receiver. You think about NFL, it's quarterback, wide receiver, offensive tackle, right? Edge and defensive back, right? Those are the premium positions, right? Those are the positions that really win. You see teams like this, like with TJ Hockenson, now he's traded. And like, they take kind of a big loss on the trade, right? The Lions receive a second and a third round pick, while the Vikings get back a fourth round selection and a conditional pick, like sort of out in the future, right? So it's really only a bump. Like, when you actually break this deal down, it is only a bump from the fourth to the second round for the Lions, right? You spent a top 10 pick on TJ Hockenson. That's a loss. That's a loss. And so that's one of the things I think with looking at some of these deals, that's a big lesson that we have to take. I just can't justify taking a non-premium position unless the player is really, truly elite, and truly a generational type of player, in the NFL in particular. And then, like you see here in one of the things I kept coming back to this offseason was, in the top five rounds, I think it's got to be five quarterbacks and tight ends combined in our tight end premium leagues, in our Superflex tight end premium leagues. Or it was, hey, I'll take Justin Jefferson, or I'll take Christian McCaffrey if he falls. But it was less than a handful of players on that non-premium list. And I think that this is another, like, example of why, right? The NBA, what do we see? Like, wings are really, really difficult to acquire. They rarely hit free agency. Tight ends, we see, same with wide receivers. A true big-time difference-making wide receivers don't really hit free agency. And you just look at sort of the difference of a guy like – the difference in the cost between a guy like A.J. Brown. Heck, the difference in the cost between a guy like Marquise Brown and T.J. Hockenson, right? Relative to their positions, Hockenson's probably better. In the grand scheme of where he would rank at the tight end position versus where Marquise Brown would rank at the wide receiver position. But the cost isn't even that close, right? So that's one of the things when I look at this, like, constantly be drafting premium positions. And I think the Hockenson example is one that's a lesson that we should learn. Chase Claypool is another one. I mean, when you look at Claypool, like, I think he's I don't think he's that good. But it's the tax that you pay for a premium position, right? And this is kind of what we see. In essence, what Chicago did was trade a non-premium position for a premium position. Now, could they have gone it a different way than a guy like Claypool? Maybe. But again, the cost control is big, right? The cost control is big in terms of they have him under control for another year, and then they could tag him, right? Whereas Chicago was going to have to pay Roquan Smith, right, or lose him and get a comp pick that was later, probably, well, definitely would have been later than the second round pick that they got. So I keep looking at the premium position angle of these things, and just it keeps popping up. And I think that you want to constantly be addressing the premium positions, and that holds true in Dynasty and in the NFL. No Cooks trade, like, that honestly probably doesn't hurt him much. I don't know, he's made some rumblings on Twitter today about being annoyed, so we'll see how that goes. The Ridley trade, I mean, it was a fresh start that I kind of I didn't think he was ever going to play for Atlanta again. Like, I thought that ship had sailed. And this obviously confirms that he's going to Jacksonville. And I think it's a good move for Jacksonville, right? It's a relatively low cost, high ceiling type of trade for them. So, you know, good for Jacksonville constantly trying to surround Trevor Lawrence with weapons, right? I think that is a good idea as well. Opens up a real angle for Drake London, right? There's a clear Drake London, Kyle Pitts nexus to this passing offense if and when this passing offense goes forward. Yeah, I heard it today, and I believe that this is true. Like, when you look at how this trade sort of shapes out, this is really, like, this team and the way Atlanta's structured, right? They don't believe that Marcus Mariota is the answer at quarterback. It's kind of why they're operating the way that they are. But they are set up very well for when they do have a quarterback. And I'll go through this in a few minutes. I think that there's some guys that are out there that I'm not sure are on their team, you know, and I think, you know, is Derek Carr one of those guys? Like, we'll talk about that in a bit. But I keep thinking about how some of these teams are set up to go forward. And this seems like a move that now they got the assets in their pocket. Jacksonville can get him in sooner in terms of, you know, maybe working with him. I'm not sure what his suspension limitations are, but in the offseason as well, they won't have to wait as long until the trade deadline and all that stuff. So so I think, you know, I think that's good. You know, for everyone around, it's probably a good breakup. Hines to Buffalo, couple of reactions to this. It gets Zach Moss out of there. They've clearly wanted to get more receiving out of their running backs. That's been something that we've consistently seen be true from Buffalo. This does that. I thought James Cook looked pretty good the other night. His stats kind of back that up. They've shown the desire to use him more. They have left Zach Moss as inactive and now move on from him. So I actually, when you look at this deal for Nyheim Hines, there's no guarantees on it after this year. It's a relatively cheap deal. And it leaves James Cook as being the only player in that backfield with guaranteed money going forward. So I'm interested in sort of what this looks like, in this next, in these next iterations of this offense. And I think for James Cook, we see second round, we see day two guys get a full opportunity at some point. We'll watch with what happens with a guy like Devin Singletary. Does he hit the market? We'll be watching that. Again, replaceable position, right? Got to be careful about spending assets on a replaceable position. But I'll be interested. And I think that's one thing. It eliminates Zach Moss as any sort of competition for this job and as a level of uncertainty. And I think we all think Nyheim Hines he's a fine player, but I don't think he's a true every down back. So I think that this opens up a potential for James Cook to actually have some more opportunity, a clearer opportunity to be the starting running back in this backfield. All right, so that's pretty much the big reactions that I had from the trade deadline here. You know, overall, let's turn to the quarterback stuff. Again, I want to do sort of a whole big mashup here of stuff with the quarterback position. I went through and I was just gazing some numbers here, and I found I just went through the top PFF grade of the week each week. And I thought there's some interesting stuff here. Josh Allen in week one, Jalen Hurts in week two, Kirk Cousins in week three, Geno Smith in week four, and to that point, Geno Smith had the highest PFF grade of the season at 91.6. Week five is actually Geno Smith again with a 91 PFF grade. So two of the, he has the top two PFF grades through 5 weeks. Week six, it is Josh Allen again. So Josh Allen is a two, Josh Allen and Geno Smith are the two timers on the list. Then you actually see PJ Walker post the highest PFF grade of the season at 94. He had six big time throws against Tampa Bay. Just an incredible performance from a guy that was the best, maybe the best player in the XFL, and a really, really cool story. So we'll get to that a little bit more in a minute here. Tua this past week, he actually has the best PFF grade of the season, one of the best PFF grades ever given out, 96.1. Geno Smith, again, cracks up above 91, 91.1 this week. So when you look at the top five PFF scores of the season, it is Tua in week eight, PJ Walker in week seven, Geno Smith in week four, Geno Smith in week eight, Geno Smith in week five. Just incredible, incredible there for him. Again, the Walker one, that's a, it's a big difference, right, to get from where he is at 94 in that week, right? It's a big difference between that and 91, right? We see three guys at 90, you know, we see Geno Smith at 91 three times, and then we see that big gap between him and a 94 for Walker. That's a truly impressive, impressive performance there. Is PJ Walker like the next thing? Is he the next sort of Geno Smith? I don't know. I tend to not think so. However, I tend not to think that elite game performances are like fluky stuff. Is the stuff is like, it's really, really hard to be that good. He has nine big time throws and one turnover worthy play on the season. Like, that is a really hard thing to fluke into. Now, is that sort of performing at the high end of his variance? Probably. Right. I tend to think of him differently now that we see this. I tend to think of him differently. There's some splits too between the games that he's actually played and the games that he's started. There's some splits in there as well that I've heard talked about. I'm interested. I think, and I've heard this talked about a little bit too. I think the way that we go about selecting quarterbacks and trying to determine quarterbacks, I think we probably don't do a great job of scouring available talent. Do we spend a lot of time and energy on drafting quarterbacks? Yes, we do. Do we get it right? Not that great. Yeah, I mean, really, like maybe a 50-60% hit rate on guys like up at the top of the draft. I'm open to the idea that there's other ways to go about it. You know, one of the things, like with these developmental leagues, we're seeing the XFL come back. You know, we're trying to see more of these developmental leagues. I think it's you know, if we get one from that, that's a big deal. I don't know if PJ Walker is going to be the guy, but I'm interested when we see stories like this. I'm interested in how we keep thinking about them and thinking about quarterbacks in ways that maybe we haven't been doing a good job of. Geno Smith, I think, forcing us to maybe rethink a bit about, hey, if we have an incomplete on a guy, right, and he's going to get a shot, you know, that's one thing where, you know, and the maturity difference of being 23 versus 30, right? If you've hung around that long, right, it's not super likely that you're going to get a shot again. But if you get a shot again, like, you might be a completely different player than you were before, right? And that's one of the things, like, I'm trying to keep an open mind to, because I think as we look at this, like, the miss rate on quarterbacks is pretty big. And we see guys that slip through the cracks for a variety of different reasons. And, you know, Dak Prescott being a really good example of it, Jalen Hurts being another good example of it. We see guys that are slipping through the cracks, and that once they truly do get their opportunity, they can excel. And so I'm really interested in that, and trying to keep forcing ourselves to keep an open mind on these, and, you know, kind of do a, I'm going to do kind of like a late season, you know, a little bit of a late season research project, sort of before waivers close up for the year, looking at some names that maybe we could be thinking about of like, hey, kind of deeper stashes that it's like a what the heck type of stash you're going into the off season, and inspired a lot by the play of Geno Smith and PJ Walker. So those are the ones. I mean, again, who on that list has been an elite prospect? Like, you look at where those guys came from. Allen was, frankly, not that highly thought of by me, by a lot of people, like a lot of questions about him coming into the NFL. Hurts was thought of as a guy that couldn't really throw. And by the way, these are PFF passing grades. I didn't even take the offensive grades. I just took the passing grades. Cousins was a day three pick. Geno Smith, afterthought. Josh Allen, again, right? We just talked about with the erratic profile. PJ Walker, right? XFL. Tua was actually the most heralded of this group, right? But absent from this are guys that were, frankly, much more highly thought of players coming out. Let's look at the bottom PFF grades. Right? Let's look at the bottom of them. Week one, Fields. Honorable mentions to Dak Prescott and Derek Carr, who really struggled in week one. Then you go forward to week two. It's actually Tannehill. Jameis Winston's the second worst one of that week. Three, Flacco, with the worst performance of the season so far. Mayfield, right behind him in week three. Lawrence in week four. Russ in week five. Zach Wilson in week six. Tyler Heinicke in week seven. And then Zach Wilson actually makes a show on that list as well. And then it's Malik Willis this past week. Right, when you look at the bottom five PFF grades on the season, okay, it's Flacco, it's Lawrence, it's Tyler Heinicke, and it's Fields, right, and Malik Willis, right, those guys. It's Malik Willis and then Fields. Right, what do we see there? Right, we actually see guys that were, frankly, between Lawrence and Fields, really, really highly thought of prospects. Again, Flacco was a... You know, there was debates about him being an elite quarterback for a while, you know, going back. So, again, I think the quarterback position is changing, and I think we have to be open to, you know, different types of profiles being successful. And I think it's not to say that we, you know, change around our base rates or anything like that. I think it's probably an example of we spend just more volume on it. Right, I think that's one of the things that we think about, is that we'd be open to spending more volume on the position. You know, stashing guys like Geno Smith, where, hey, you know, there was some stuff here that we just haven't fully truly seen, and what could happen with some time. I mean, maybe in a couple years that's a Drew Lock, right? I doubt that that's true, right? The odds of Drew Lock becoming a starter here long term in his career, super low. However, right, there's probably some chance of him maturing and it happening. And if he sort of sticks around in the NFL and learns, and we sort of know that as a, you know, hey, they trust him to be in the room, right? And he spends 3, 4, 5 years doing that. You know, is Drew Lock at 28, 29, a player that frankly had an opportunity to sort of learn through a lot of his problems and be a contributing player, right? We see this with Tannehill, right? I'm more and more open to some of these ideas. Again, it's not, and I'm skeptical of taking guys in the top 10 because, again, people assume the hit rate's a lot lower. I'm just trying to keep thinking of different ways that we could potentially try and exploit some of this stuff. And so I'm interested, and I'll be curious. Maybe we'll even do some poll stuff on who those guys might be. But I just think that's a consistent theme that we see. All right, I went back through the confidence rankings and just some different names that I changed around for 2023 starter confidence. Tua, yes. Right, that Tua is a yes in terms of being a confident 2023 starter. Mac Jones, I moved a no. Not sure what's going on there. You know, Bailey Zappi is another name we can add to that list, by the way. Not sure what what that whole situation is going to bring from week to week. So I'm skeptical. I think Mac Jones is underperformed. Zach Wilson's another one. Heck, Mike White may be a name that we have to put on that list of guys that, frankly, for a period of time, like we had some, like, hey, is this a real thing, right? Mike White, a guy that got a little bit of an opportunity, played really well, and then kind of didn't, right? He kind of fizzled out. But again, we are seeing these opportunities. And again, maybe some of that is the passing game stuff in college offenses, right? Seeing more and more passing stuff, right? There's more and more guys that are just, it's just a higher, right? It's just, you know, I don't know, the 100th best quarterback in the country is just better than they were really at any other time, right? Maybe that could be really a bit of it too. You know, Lawrence, how do we feel on that, right? I tend to think that they give him a shot going forward, but is he grown? Right, like if they had a top five pick in this draft, are they going to draft a quarterback? God, it'd be really hard for me to say at this point that they shouldn't. Like, that's a lot there. You know, Tannehill, what are they going to do with him? He's actually played really well. He's played really well, and they've overperformed. I think a lot of people thought, like, hey, this is kind of the last ride for this offense. They're kind of moving in a different direction. Like, they're the favorite to win the division again. You know, and sort of looking at that, you know, continue to go forward. By the way, Ellinger, another name on the list of guys that, you know, are getting opportunities here that are sort of atypical in our profile stuff. Like, the names keep adding up, and I think it's a source of analysis that I think we have to be more attuned to as well. Derek Carr, I'm still a no on penciling him in through next year. Remember, I have this sort of theory about the Kyler Murray theory, we'll call it. The Kyler Murray theory of a rumor coverage, I guess. I don't know. Like, when you hear enough stuff sort of murmured about in the press, you have to be sort of attuned to, they know more than maybe we do, and they're just not sort of in a spot to actually confirm it or to attribute it to anyone or something like that. There's enough, hey, Derek Carr could be traded. Hey, Derek Carr, they could move on from type of stuff. It's consistent with what the contract says. The contract's really tradable. Like, there's a lot of that stuff there that I'm just hearing bandied about. And I'm interested sort of to see what the changes could be. Heck, is that a place where Mac Jones could get traded to, right? I'm just super interested to see if maybe we're next year in another quarterback revolving door in the offseason. There's a lot of these spots where, like, I think we have a lot of questions about. Is Andy Dalton the potential starter in New Orleans, right? Can P.J. Walker win this job? I don't think so. I think it's unlikely that happens. But I'm open to the idea, if he does this for 8 more weeks, that he could, right? Or plays at a high level, right? If he plays at a top, you know, 15 level, do they give him another shot? You know, they've been searching high and low for quarterback. And this is maybe the two best games that they've got from a quarterback in, like, the Scott Fitterer era. Like, it came from P.J. Walker, right? So I'm sort of interested in that. I changed some teams around. I went back through still 16 teams that I don't have confidence in their 2023 starters. I took New England off the list because I sort of had on the list all guys that I felt confident in, that I felt were 2021 rookies. Okay, and I sort of said, yes, I sort of feel confident about them. I'm sort of giving them the benefit of the doubt through 2 years at the end of year three. What is, if there's stuff that changes this season, I think we can adjust to that. That was sort of my default rule entering the season, was I am going to give everyone sort of 3 years of, you know, I feel they're going to confidently start the third year unless something changes. New England, something has changed. Right, and Mac Jones hasn't been the player that he was to start last year. He's been turning the ball over a lot, and they've got this quarterback back-and-forth fiasco going on. Not certain long-term that he's the guy. Zach Wilson, like, he's the worst quarterback under pressure in the NFL. Not great. Davis Mills, probably not playing well enough to earn a long-term job, or to hold off an early round pick. Now, that said, again, is he a type like Gardner Minshew, or a type like like a Geno or someone like this who, with a little bit more seasoning and a little bit more, growth in his game, could actually get another opportunity, right? That's a name that I'm open to that idea on. Indy against Sam Ellinger is another one there that this has been true about. Tennessee, I'm not certain. I tend to think that it's probably not Malik Willis, but we're going to see more and more. Do they bring back Ryan Tannehill again, right? He's going basically into the last year of his contract. They're going to have to make up kind of their mind here. Vegas with Derek Carr, not sure. Daniel Jones, last year of his contract. Washington, can't say what they're going to do. Detroit, Jared Goff, they could get off his contract, and they're probably going to pick in the top like 8 picks of the NFL draft. Chicago, I'm not sure with Fields. I'm not sure what they think with Fields. On one hand, I think, hey, maybe they think they're actually like a play. Do they look in the mirror and see a playoff team, or do they look in the mirror and see a team that's retooling? The addition of Chase Claypool is one that I'm like, I'm not entirely sure why you would do that if you weren't trying to compete this year, right? So that would sort of be the thought there. The Saints, again, could Andy Dalton play his way into being up there for a 2023 starting job? They don't have a clear way to fix it, right? They don't have a clear way to fix that. So he's certainly, I don't think he's drawing dead. He has live outs for that job long term. Tampa with Brady, who knows? Seattle. Geno Smith isn't under contract, but I'm think he's going to be a starter someplace. It's sort of my assumption. I don't know sort of what that's going to look like. But again, you start counting these up, and you're like, wow, there's a lot of situations that we're uncertain about. Atlanta with Mariota, I don't think I mentioned. But I think that, I don't think that this is what they aspire to be offensively long term. So we'll see. Some fun PFF stats that I was just sort of searching through here. I just looked at the best PFF grades on deep passes because there's some stuff in here that I thought was counterintuitive. So the best PFF grades on deep passes are passes of 20 air yards or more. Geno Smith, 95.7. Those are 12.9% of his attempts. He averages 12.5 yards per attempt on deep passes. Tom Brady, the next one up, 94.9, 10.5 yards per attempt. Those are 10.3% of his attempts. Josh Allen, 94.6. He actually averages 21.4 yards per attempt, and those are 12.5% of his throws. PJ Walker, 94.5 PFF grade, a 10.9 average, and those are 17.5% of his throws. Throwing the ball down the field. Remember, there was that game where he almost had a negative ADOT. It was absurd. And that was, I think, a game he came in relief. And again, there's a split between the games he's coming in relief and the games he's actually been a starter. So I think it's interesting. Jalen Hurts, 93.5 PFF grade, 19.5 yards per attempt, 8.5% of his attempts. So not that many, but really good at them. Andy Dalton, 92.9 PFF grade on throws 20 yards or more down the field. That is the sixth best PFF grade on deep passes in the league. So guys that run counter to what we would think. Walker for sure. Brady, people think he's eroding. Doesn't really seem to be true. Dalton, people think he can't really throw down the field. Come to find out, like, when you're not maybe playing with, when you actually have some downfield talent, like, you can actually do some stuff. And that seems to be something with Dalton that, frankly, put him in a dome. I'm interested. And again, I don't know how they have a clear out to a starting quarterback outside of someone that they have on the roster right now. And I'm interested in sort of going forward on Dalton's progression. So interesting stuff there. I did some worst PFF deep ball grades. Brett Rypien, 25.5 to 17.4% of his attempts. Maybe you should do that a lot less. Zach Wilson, 38.7 PFF grade, 10.6% of his attempts. Lamar Jackson, 43.3 PFF grade. He's averaging 7.4 yards per attempt on throws 20 or more yards down the line of scrimmage. Those are 13.6% of his attempts. So some wild lack of connectivity down the field. Kyler Murray, 50.7 PFF grade, 7.1 yards per attempt. Those are 11.4% of his attempts. And then Joe Flacco, 52.4 PFF grade, 11 yards per attempt on throws 20 or more yards down the line of scrimmage, down the field, 8.4% of his attempts. I did have some stuff here on Zach Wilson. When you actually look at Zach Wilson's stuff, it's pretty rough in terms of where he's at. I don't love it. Would sort of be my thing here. I'm a little skeptical of him long term. Just it has been pretty rough with his, you know, with his performance under pressure. You watch him just make the same mistakes over and over again. Just really tough. Like you saw him, you know, getting flushed out of the pocket and then making sort of light throws back across his body into traffic getting picked. And you just saw it like multiple times happen just this past week. Really, really hard time seeing that. PFF grade when clean, Zach Wilson, 89.6. That's a really good grade. And that's not passer rating. That's PFF grade. That's graded out of 100. Again, those are the sort of numbers we were talking about earlier on where like 91 was excellent, right? He's at 89.6. That's really good from a clean pocket. Under pressure, 23. That's horrendous, right? That's well worse than the worst grade of anyone this season. The worst grade of any quarterback this season in PFF grade is 27.7 for Flacco. So well worse than that is Wilson under pressure. When you look at yards per attempt when kept clean, 9.1. Yards per attempt when under pressure, 1.7. Just tough, you know, really, really not productive. Completion percentage kept clean, 75.7%. Completion percentage under pressure, 16.1%. ADOT, right, your average depth of target, how far down the field you are throwing the ball, 6.4 yards per attempt when kept clean, 12.7 yards per attempt on pressure. Get rid of the football is the lesson from that. Stop trying to throw the ball down the field. Get rid of the football. Zach Wilson's been under pressure 42 times and has 54 yards and 2 interceptions on those. This is according to Sam Monson, all these Zach Wilson stats over at PFF. He's also lost 54 yards on sacks. He's technically averaging 0 net passing yards when pressured. He has the same amount of sacks yardage, 54, as he does passing yards on 42 pressure dropbacks this season. Just horrendous, horrendous performance. He also has 50 yards on scrambles. So 50 total yards on 42 dropbacks and 2 turnovers. That's brutal. Comparison stuff here as well. Mahomes, 6.6 yards per dropback. Wilson, 1.2. Josh Allen is at 12. That's just an absurd number for, you know, just in comparison perspective of where Wilson is. So pretty skeptical on him at this particular point. Let's look again. I was talking about earlier about where Tua fits kind of in the, you know, in the sphere of kind of like the young quarterbacks. It's called like the young quarterbacks that are sort of pre-extension, if you will. Like think about where those guys are at, and sort of what their arc is. So it's actually Tua that has the best PFF grade of any quarterback this season from basically the last 3 quarterback classes. Jalen Hurts is the second best. It's a pretty big tier break after that to Burrow. Burrow has almost as many big time throws as turnover-worthy plays. 11 big time throws, 10 turnover-worthy plays. Tua has actually got 7 big time throws and 10 turnover-worthy plays. He's throwing the ball down the field a bit more, which I think is part of the reason why his PFF grade's higher. I think some of that is results based as well. He has been not sacked on nearly as many pressures as Burrow has been. For example, Burrow's still just taking a ton of sacks on his pressures. Just can't help himself. This year, it's gotten worse. It has actually gotten worse, which is just incredible. 31.2% of his pressures he's been sacked on. That's worse from last year, which was 26.9, and it's worse from 2020. He has regressed in that stat. Again, this is a spot where I, you know, people want to blame his performance on playing under pressure all the time because of the offensive line. He plays himself into pressure. That's the Joe Burrow experience. He plays himself into sacks, and just refuses not to take them. Basically, he's been kept clean this year on 73.3% of his dropbacks. That's better actually than last year at 65.7% of his dropbacks. So from that perspective, it's good. He's being kept clean a little bit more. And I think a lot of that is he's getting it out a little bit quicker, as would be the part of that. Even his under pressure stuff, he's keeping it a little bit quicker at maybe like between 1 and 2 tenths of a second quicker is when his under pressure stuff is, right? So he's getting rid of the ball a little bit faster. Right? I think it's one of the things you could take from that. But it's still taking too much pressure relative to, it's still taking too many sacks relative to his pressure. So, I don't love where he's at, with those metrics. He's got to get better at those. He's putting himself in unnecessary trouble. And for fantasy purposes, I guess it doesn't matter a ton, right? You're not getting killed. This isn't like you're throwing interceptions and you're taking losses on it. But ultimately, for him to, you know, to be functional, he's got to be, you know, he has to be better at what he's doing. Leads the league in lost yards on sacks this year. Led the league in sacks last year. He has almost as many sacks this year, 29, as he did in his rookie season, 32. He only played 10 games in his rookie season. He's played 8 this year. Again, this is, it's bad. Right? It's bad. So, it's just not good. Like, even when you adjust for the fact that he's gotten better protection this year, right? He's actually gotten better protection. He's been under pressure less than he was last year. His sack rate hasn't come down. That's sort of how much he is attributing to it. It was 8.9% of his dropbacks he was sacked last year. It's 8.7 this year. But there's been a lot less dropbacks where he's actually been under pressure. He's just sort of doing a terrible job of not taking sacks when he's pressured. So, and that's a quarterback stat. That really is. And that's something he's consistently been high on, and it's getting worse instead of better. When you look at a guy like Trevor Lawrence, he's actually outstanding at that. He's really, really good at not taking sacks when he's under pressure, 13.3%. That's like amongst the best. Let me just put the qualifier up here. The only person better in the last 3 draft classes at avoiding sacks when pressured is actually Justin Herbert. So everyone is worse than Lawrence. Like, Lawrence is really good at that. Burrow's the worst, right? So again, there's some stuff there that Burrow has to get better at, or else I worry about his longevity, because he's kind of doing it to himself. Some other stuff here. Mac Jones needs to cut down on the turnovers. He's basically, him and Zach Wilson are up at the top of the position with Justin Fields, of guys in the last 3 years in terms of turnover-worthy play rate. So that's not great. He is also up there. He leads in big-time throw rate, which I think is counterintuitive. He's leading in big-time throw rate and turning the ball over a ton. that's anything but what you expected from Mac Jones coming into the season. So that's one. You know, that's a, I think, an interesting facet to some of the stuff. Is like we sort of assume we know about guys, but that has been one that has been counter to the stereotype of Mac Jones. Jalen Hurts doing a great job. 9 big time throws, 4 turnover-worthy plays, 8.5 yards per attempt. His stuff's really good in terms of his PFF grade and all that stuff. Like, not taking sacks at a high rate, like all that stuff's pretty good for him. Pickett, it's still early yet, turning the ball over too much. We'll withhold judgment. It's only 191 dropbacks, which is actually more dropbacks this year than Zach Wilson has taken, which is just, I think, an interesting comparison point there as well. So that's the stuff. I mean, I'm not super worried about Herbert long term. I kind of hope that he has a better I hope this offense kind of works out a little bit better. Maybe if they get, I think get, just getting Keenan Allen back would be helpful to their entire offense. But they've been banged up pretty much throughout the season. It's been now Mike Williams is banged up. They've been dealing with Keenan Allen. I thought maybe they'd make a move. I saw them linked to Brandon Cooks, which I thought would have been really interesting, but they chose not to go that way. So we'll watch here going forward, you know, how they can get this offense to be better. And maybe it's some stylistic changes and sort of do some of the stuff that he can do more frequently would be one of the things that I would look at. Like he leads, he's one of the highest in terms of, you know, short throws of these guys. He actually lead in terms of this draft, these past three draft classes, 18.5% of his attempts have been behind the line of scrimmage. Only Bailey Zappe and Justin Fields are worse. Right? So they need to be sort of more vertical, like by way of reference. Herbert, 18.5% of his throws are behind the line of scrimmage. He's only getting 4.5 yards per attempt on those. Compare that to Tua, who's only at 10.2%. Again, and they're Tua's getting less yards per attempt. Again, it's not, those aren't efficient throws. But you're getting almost twice the rate of them. Compare that to, for example, throws in the intermediate, which again are highly effective throws, highly efficient throws. That's your good bang for your buck stuff. Tua throwing them 30.6% of the time. Just a lot of throws to where you can really get some good easy stuff there. And again, he's getting 11.7 yards per attempt there and really isn't doing any big time throws. Right, like it's a really it's a low big time throw rate, just sort of collecting that easy stuff, getting those easy buckets. When you look at that same 10 to 19 yards down the line of scrimmage, Herbert, 15.6%. So half the time he's throwing in that sweet spot. It's just not giving him the easy buckets in this offense. You know, when you actually look at some of the deeper stuff, Herbert's at 10.1%. Again, that's 12.6 yards per attempt on those. Tua, this is at 12.9%, so a little bit more. And he's at 20.3 yards per attempt. So he's getting just the better efficiency throws. And we're seeing as a result of that, like, more production. So I think a lot of what's going on with Herbert is it's just not designed, or he's not capitalizing on the good stuff, right? The easy stuff. When you look at some of these things, so that gives me some pause as well. You know, overall, sort of in this offense, one of the things that I constantly, I don't know if it's joke about or, not necessarily complain about, but one of the things that I think about with like these, you know, the Shanahan tree. Right, so that's Tua right now. It's Garoppolo, right? It's Zach Wilson, right? Sort of those guys. Heck, it's Mariota. Like, yeah, I like you can really do a lot statistically without doing a lot, without much being required of you, performance wise. Right, like you don't have to do. You can get a lot out of it just by sort of throwing it in the right spots, as opposed to, in some of these other offenses that ask their quarterbacks to do a lot more hard things. Just for example, here, Zach Wilson, 10.7 yards per attempt, throws sort of in that intermediate. Again, that's that Shanahan offense. Top five as well in that range. Aaron Rodgers, Mahomes. Tua is at 8 in that. Mariota's 9, right? You look at Goff as well in that range. Like, again, that same offense, like you see a high concentration of guys sort of throwing it in that range, doing really well. Right? Who are the guys that are throwing it there a ton? Tua the third most, Mariota the fifth most. And then you actually look down here, it's, you get some of the guys like Mariota and stuff are a little bit further down. In terms of their throw. So Tua's 3, Mariota's 5. Zach Wilson, for his part, is way down at 22, so really not taking advantage of some of that stuff that is offered there. Like Garoppolo, this is at 17. So again, he's 21.5%. Right? They tend to put the ball to easy spots for their quarterbacks, and you just look with a guy like with some of these guys just aren't getting that opportunity. Herbert, one of those guys, right? Just a really low percentage of his throws out of 50 guys, out of 40 guys that qualify in intermediate throws. Justin Herbert, 38th highest in terms of percentage of his throws in that range. So just some easy stuff that I think he could be getting that he's not, and that's kind of disappointing here. By the way, Rodgers ranks worst in that. So I don't know what that is about Rodgers, why he's not getting it. That's a question for me, considering it's that same style of, it's that same tree. It's the same, you know, it's a branch off of that same Shanahan tree. All right, so that's pretty much it here. I did want to give, like, I like to do sort of these, you know, progress reports on the young guys here every quarter or so. So about halfway through the season here. It's not a true halfway mark of the season, considering it's an odd number of games now. But again, you sort of get the idea what we're 8 weeks through and really sort of heading. I guess we're 8 weeks through the fantasy season. That kind of puts us right there at the, pretty close to the end of the season there in terms of fantasy games, halfway through the season there in terms of fantasy games. So heading towards the playoffs as we work on here. Again, I'm keep thinking about upticks at premium positions, right? Think about how do we get better quarterback. Think about how we take shots at tight end and tight end premium leagues. Constantly sort of be addressing those positions, and don't spend a ton of, right? Don't spend good assets at non-premium positions when a lot of that work can really, really help you. You just look at the teams where you have good quarterbacks, you have really good tight end production, right? In those types of formats, it's really like those teams are really high floor, right? And they're really high ceiling as well. So just sort of keep that in mind as you're sort of addressing these positions. You know, if Herbert's going to come at a discount, like, now's the time to go, right? Like, just keep thinking about those things. Whoever's sort of down, we want a shot at. So that's some ideas here as we head into this the second half of the season. And that'll do it for this edition. All right, until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.